And welcome to another episode of ADHD Women's Wellbeing Wisdom, little short bite-sized pieces of wisdom that I've curated from all the many, many episodes that have been recorded over this time. And I really hope that this short insight will help you on the week ahead. So on today's episode, I speak with Lisa Ryan. Now, Lisa is an experienced trauma-informed physiotherapist and somatic therapy practitioner, and she supports people, many of them with ADHD, who experience persistent or chronic pain and health issues such as fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, unexplained physical symptoms that we often hear about with ADHD, as well as burnout. And she really hones in on the nervous system. So this episode was a fantastic, informative and insightful conversation about how the nervous system impacts our ADHD and vice versa, actually. Now, if you are interested in nervous system regulation, I have just released a 4-part pre-recorded workshop series called Regulating Your ADHD Nervous System, and it's all through the polyvagal approach. I absolutely loved running this workshop. It's 4 hours worth and they're delivered to you once a week. So it's really not overwhelming. And I hope it feels like a real connection to understanding how you can work with your nervous system so you can understand it better through the ADHD lens. Let's listen to today's episode.
The nervous system, basically, because it controls every aspect of our health, when the nervous system is dysregulated, if someone has had chronic stress or has had trauma, like developmental trauma or experienced trauma through the years, regulating the nervous system is key, really, because when the nervous system is dysregulated, it's in that kind of response, protective response, where the world just doesn't feel that safe. So when the world doesn't feel so safe and day-to-day is quite stressful, the nervous system will continue to activate that survival response. And the pain mechanism, it's part of the survival response. So every time someone is going through that state of stress or even shutdown, which is our freeze response, they're likely going to also experience a lot of pain as well, because it's part of the survival response. So for example, if someone comes to see me and they've got lower back pain, they've been through all of the investigations, they've tried a lot of things, they might have been referred for some cognitive behavioral therapy, they might have gone to therapy and had like a rehab plan. And if it hasn't worked, it's then really, really helpful to look at the health of the nervous system. And something like somatic therapy can be really useful for that, because it just addresses both the physical and the emotional aspects of pain.
So it's like basically acknowledging that what we've gone through emotionally, whether there's been trauma there in our life, is acknowledging that the physical pain is connected to that. And if we help heal and release the emotional side, the physical side is then helped as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Because the aim really is to help and support the body to come out of a protective state. So with the stresses that are faced with ADHD, especially sort of day to day, if we're able to come out of the stress response when things have possibly settled, rather than being stuck in that stress response, that can be really, really helpful as well, because it comes down to the basics of, does the body feel safe in this world, or does it feel unsafe in this world?
So, yeah, I mean, when you talk about safety and I think about ADHD, I think we have felt probably disconnected. We've not understood ourselves, not understood our behavior, not understood why certain things feel so hard and have been so hard. So that sort of disconnect when we withdraw and we are masking as well, like just the masking alone for anyone with neurodivergences, is exhausting. And I know from, you know, so many people that just having to mask every day is crippling. And when people get the diagnosis and they're able to slowly, very slowly, because again, like you say, it's the safe aspect. You know, some people kind of open up and talk about it with their family and their friends, but at work, they're not. So the mask has to come back on at work. I guess the tension and the stiffness and all that in the body goes on all day. And then it's like telling ourselves actually we're safe when we come home, and it's doing all sorts of things to our nervous system. But I'm interested to know sort of practically now. So if people are listening and they're like, oh my goodness, yes, I need help with this. They can't see you. Maybe they can't find a somatic therapist near them, or they can't afford that. How can they help themselves at home?
Yeah, so it can be as simple as doing a grounding and orientating technique. So that it's a really, really helpful technique to basically communicate with the nervous system to say, in this very moment, you are okay and you are safe. So, for example, if someone is working at a desk job and all these emails have come through and it starts to become quite stressful because, you know, there's a lot to get through and might have deadlines, etc., etc. So what they can do is actually, if they take a little break and head to the bathroom, they can sit on the toilet and just come back to the present moment. So the nervous system, whatever direction it's gone in, whether that's a fight, flight, or freeze state, when it gets put into back into the present moment, it can start to sort of have a look around and see, is this a safe environment or is it not? So it doesn't have to be in the bathroom. It can be literally anywhere if it's a nice, quiet space. So you start by grounding. So you feel your feet on the ground and you're just feeling that support of the chair that's underneath and behind you. And you then begin to orientate. So what I mean by that is you start to look at different objects in within your environment. So say, for example, if you do have to sort of get yourself into the bathroom, you're sitting on the toilet and you see things like the toilet roll holder or the door lock. You know, you might read, there might be like an advert on the back of the, anywhere. And you basically orientate to these objects, and the nervous system then gets visual feedback from these objects that they are non-life-threatening. So therefore, the system automatically starts to calm because it can see for itself that there's no actual danger where that person is. So then it has no choice but to automatically activate that rest and digest relaxation response. So that can be done within like 30 seconds. Obviously, sometimes it might take a little bit longer, but it's just about doing small techniques like that, that just through the day reminds the nervous system that what might be perceived as life-threatening, actually that person is in a relatively safe environment.
Yeah.
If it is, of course.
It's amazing, isn't it, what our brain, because we've got that sort of old reptilian brain that is basically, like you say, the sort of the fight, flight or freeze on, and it's just scanning for danger. And we don't know if an email going to the wrong person is the danger, similar danger as like, you know, like a lion chasing us, or we are in a deadline and we're not making that deadline, or we've forgotten something, or we're late for something. You know, these are all daily occurrences, especially, you know, with people with ADHD. I don't know, do you work with a lot of people who are working in fast-paced corporate jobs who are struggling on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, that's kind of most of my caseload, if I'm completely honest, because it's that level of expectation. And, you know, if we think ourselves as humans, so humans that would have, you know, yes, we would have done our work, we would have been farming, we would have, you know, done all the sort of house life admin stuff, but we would also have, we would have rested so much more. We would have been around those campfires, connecting with each other, having those downtimes. It just seems these days there aren't those downtimes. it's just a constant go, go, go. And like you're saying, you know, living with a condition like ADHD, you've got so much more energy then on top of the go, go, go to be able to, yeah, just function in a way that allows you to kind of, you know, be part of that society in a way. But it's incredibly taxing. And I think once we start looking at life, not just as a human, but through the lens of the nervous system, then we can certainly identify how massively busy life is that doesn't suit the nervous system. It doesn't work with it because we work so much against the nervous system. We work against all those cues, bodily cues that, you know, might be screaming at us to say, can you please just stop?
What would be one of those bodily cues if we were starting to be more aware and start noticing? What would that, you know, what would that look like to somebody if they don't understand how their nervous system shows up in their body?
Yeah, so there it would be your kind of muscular tension. So you might not actually feel that tension. You might not feel that pain until you've actually sat and brought yourself back to the present moment. So I'm digressing a little bit here, but I get a lot of people who say, I don't feel any pain until I actually sit and think about it. But the pain might have always been there, kind of, you know, sort of underlying pain. It can be difficult to actually feel it or understand it as a cue because we can be so disconnected from our bodily cues to survive the day or survive all the tasks and everything that we're trying to do for that day.
How would chronic fatigue show up in our nervous system? And what's the connection, maybe the better question is, what's the connection between our nervous system and something like chronic fatigue or fibromyalgia?
So from a trauma perspective and a somatotherapy perspective, chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia tends to be related more to the freeze response. So that's our shutdown response. So you've got your fight, flight, and then you've got your freeze. So the freeze response happens because the body essentially is completely overwhelmed by the perceived danger or threat that's going on in the environment, that it shuts down bodily sensations, bodily cues. It slows the digestive process. It slows the heart rate. Everything basically just comes to a bit of a shutdown. You can stay functioning. So, you know, we could argue that there's a functional freeze response as well, where you can continue to function in life, i.e. you're able to get out of bed. You might be able to sort of do the activities of daily living, like showering and getting dressed. But everything seems to be a lot slower. So it's kind of more of a depressive state. The reasoning behind it is that there is so much underlying, so the sort of undercurrent of what's underneath the actual how someone is feeling, it's so overwhelming that the shutdown response is actually quite supportive for them to deal with their day-to-day. So when emotions, sensations, feelings, or anything is too overwhelming to continue to be experienced through the day, the body goes more into a shutdown so that people can actually deal with all the sort of sensations and feelings a little bit easier because they're not as strong and they're not as, how would you say?
Intense.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, there's a lot of relevance between chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia with the freeze response. Because whether we unconsciously or consciously choose to sort of push down these different sensations and feelings and emotions, it takes so much work and energy for the body to push that down. That's the kind of the chronic fatigue that people might be experiencing because they're trying to function with high levels of stress, but also pushing down those sort of high levels of stress as well.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I mean, that's so beautifully explained. So it's like suppressed trauma in your body that is sort of locked in and hasn't been released. But sometimes you don't even know what that trauma is, or if we're not informed, we don't even understand what trauma could look like. You know, so many of us think that trauma is like something catastrophic that happens like a one-time event, but you know, trauma can also look like ongoing small, you know, small t traumas, sort of living in a dysfunctional house for many years, having a dysfunctional parent, or living in poverty. And it doesn't have to be that one catastrophic event. It can just be a build-up of layers of trauma. So maybe that might help people understand, you know, why they're prone. And it's interesting how you say that it's the freeze, it's the stuck energy. What other sort of issues, physical issues, do you see that may be to do with other ways our nervous system processes things? Is it like an opposite of what chronic fatigue is? Is that maybe migraines or headaches? I don't know.
Yeah, so I mean, it's things like high blood pressure, and you know, some people might have irregular heartbeats, or you know, like I had one lady coming. Well, I saw her the other day, and her primary symptom was a racing heart rate. But you know, she'd had all the cardiology assessments, had been discharged by the cardiologist saying it's anxiety. And the lady was saying, well, I don't have anxiety, which was, you know, it's her lived experience. If she doesn't feel like she has anxiety, then it's fair enough. So, but that heart rate, when we dug a little bit deeper, you know, there was actually a lot that had happened to her that she had managed to suppress in some way. So, yes, she didn't feel anxious. She said herself, you know, I feel quite chilled out about life. Like there's nothing really stressing me. But actually digging a little bit deeper, there was a huge amount there. And it was as if this heart rate just kept showing up, as if, you know, please listen, please hear me out. Like I'm really quite stressed about the world, hence why my heart rate keeps, you know, increasing and increasing. And then, yeah, once we'd had that conversation, it then transpired that so much had happened to her as a child that she had, you know, understandably pushed it to one side. But it was that heart rate that just kept showing up in a way that, you know, when we look through a nervous system lens, we see that as a stress response.
Yeah. I mean, from my personal perspective, I really identify with sort of like a hypervigilance, and it's like anticipating something. So it's anticipating danger. There's fear. There's worry. It's catastrophizing. And I know these are also, you know, really kind of common traits with people with ADHD. The thing with ADHD is that so many of us look quite different. So there's lots of common traits, but some people experience it a lot more than others. But I would say a huge part of my ADHD is the racing mind and worry. And to be in that state of anticipating, you know, something to go wrong is exhausting. And my husband is always like, why are you always thinking the worst? And now I understand a lot more about my brain, and I understand about there's something called the default mode network. And with ADHD, it's a lot more prevalent. It's a much stronger network that we are always veering towards this negativity bias. And hence the reason why our imaginations are fantastic. We're so creative, but that imagination can also be sort of like the demon side of us as well, because we're worrying about every eventuality. So I know that when I do things like yoga, I mean, you know, doing some swimming, cold water swimming, which I've not done for a while, anything to do with sort of stretching, tapping, moving my body, walking outside in nature, which is all different types of somatic therapy. I mean, if we think about the word, you know, somatic, it's like our body. That helps me get out of my head, be as present as possible, and move. It's like, I just see it as sort of like this moving the stagnant energy, moving that energy out. It's just a recycling kind of filtration process that I have to do every day. And I look at people who maybe are more neurotypical, and they don't have to move every day. They don't have to exercise. They don't have to work as hard to feel emotionally regulated. And before I, you know, I had my diagnosis, I just didn't understand why some people could just be really happy and chilled and their moods didn't, you know, go up and down, and they weren't affected hormonally. And they didn't need have this like very intrinsic need to move their body and to distill this energy. So that what you're talking about shows and really highlights that very strong connection between the power of somatic therapy and using that to help our ADHD. So what I wanted to be able to offer the listeners is ways that they can incorporate types of somatic therapy. You know, it may be not what you do clinically, you know, if someone came to see you one-to-one or in a workshop, but anything that you could suggest that would help them move that energy and help them maybe even just feel a bit more present and calm in the situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, I guess my number one is always, it comes back to nature. Nature is so, so grounding. You know, it's all around us, well, hopefully, but, you know, it's even if it's a plant, you know, you can have a plant next to your desk. And if your eyes can look at that plant and can send that feedback to the nervous system that this is nature, this is calming, this is grounding, you know, that can be really helpful. Anything to do with nature is fantastic.
So I hope you enjoyed listening to this shorter episode of the ADHD Women's Wellbeing podcast. I've called it the ADHD Women's Wellbeing Wisdom because I believe there's so much wisdom in the guests that I have on and their insights. So sometimes we just need that little bit of a reminder, and I hope that has helped you today, and look forward to seeing you back on the brand new episode on Thursday. Have a good rest of your week.